Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The night of June 6, 1992, what should have been a day of joy and celebration, turned into a lifelong nightmare for three families in Springfield, Missouri. That evening, three women, 19-year-old Susie Streeter, 18-year-old Stacy McCall, and 47-year-old Cheryl Levitt, vanished from Cheryl and Susie's home on East Elmer Street. The three were never seen again, and no physical trace of them has ever been found. The disappearance of the Springfield Three is one of the most mystifying and heartbreaking cold cases in modern true crime history. Decades later, investigators, amateur sleuths, and true crime enthusiasts alike are still trying to answer the same haunting questions. What happened to Susie, Stacy, and Cheryl? Who is responsible for their disappearance? And most importantly, will their families ever get the answers they so desperately deserve? The details of this case are both chilling and perplexing, leaving behind more questions than answers. How could three women vanish so completely from their home in the middle of the night? What clues, if any, were left behind, and how has the case remained unsolved for more than 30 years, despite the efforts of law enforcement, volunteers, and even national media attention? To fully understand the weight of this case, let's begin by learning more about the three women at the center of it all. First, you have Susie Streeter. She was just 19 years old at the time of her disappearance, brimming with potential and ready to embark on the next chapter of her life. Susie was born in March 1973 and spent most of her life in Springfield after moving there with her mother Cheryl in 1980. Susie was known for her striking blonde hair, her radiant smile, and her fiercely loyal personality. She was described as kind and caring, but also somewhat reserved. Susie's teenage years weren't always easy. She struggled with a learning disability that made school difficult, and sometimes left her feeling like she didn't belong. Despite her struggles, Susie had a close-knit circle of friends and a determined attitude that helped her persevere. She had recently graduated from Kickapoo High School and was looking forward to a fresh start, hoping to carve out a bright future for herself. Susie's relationship with her mother Cheryl was incredibly close. The two shared an unbreakable bond, with Cheryl often described as her daughter's biggest supporter and most trusted confidant. Susie also had an older brother, Bart Streeter, but their relationship had grown strained in recent years. And then we had Stacy McCall. Stacy McCall, Susie's best friend, was 18 years old and full of life. She was the quintessential 1990s teenager with a love for fashion, tanning, and music. Her favorite bands were Metallica and Garth Brooks. A fun and slightly unexpected combination that perfectly reflected her outgoing personality. Stacy was bubbly, kind, and fiercely loyal to the people she cared about. She had a wide circle of friends and was known for her warm and friendly demeanor. People were drawn to Stacy because of her positivity and infectious laugh. Susie and Stacy had been childhood friends, but their bond grew even stronger in the months leading up to graduation. Stacy's family had briefly moved out of state when she was 11, which caused the two to drift apart, but they reconnected as teenagers and quickly became inseparable. Stacy was excited about her future, just like Susie, and had plans to attend college in the fall. And then we had Cheryl Levitt. Cheryl was the glue that held her family together. At 47 years old, she was a hard-working single mom who had spent years building a stable and loving home for her children. Cheryl worked as a hairstylist, a job that required long hours and endless patience, but she took pride in her work and always made time for her family. Cheryl had been married twice, first to Susie's father, Brent Streeter, and later to Don Levitt, Susie's stepfather. Both marriages ended in divorce, with Cheryl choosing to focus on her family rather than pursuing a romantic relationship. Cheryl's divorce from Don in 1989 was especially difficult, as he left her in significant debt after the failure of his business. Despite the challenges, Cheryl was determined to move forward and provide Susie with the best life possible. Cheryl had a passion for home renovation projects and was known for her resourcefulness and independence. She often taught herself how to fix things around the house, from wallpapering to varnishing furniture. Friends described her as loving, generous, and fiercely protective of her children. June 6, 1992 should have been a day of pure joy and celebration. It was graduation day for Susie and Stacy, and the entire day was filled with excitement. The ceremony was held at the Hammond Student Center in Springfield, where family and friends gathered to cheer on the graduating seniors. After the ceremony, Susie and Stacy returned home to change into more casual clothes before heading out to celebrate. Like many teens on graduation night, their plans involved party hopping and spending time with friends. Their first stop was at their friend Janelle Kirby's house in Battlefield, Missouri, a small town just outside of Springfield. Earlier that day, Susie, Stacy, and Janelle had discussed their plans. The original idea was to spend the night at Janelle's house and head to a water park in Branson, Missouri the next morning. But as the night went on, those plans changed. When Susie and Stacy arrived at Janelle's house in the early hours of June 7th, they found it packed with out-of-town relatives who had come for the graduation. The house was crowded, and Susie and Stacy didn't want to oppose. Instead, they decided to head back to Susie's house on East Delmar Street. Susie had just received a king-size waterbed as a graduation gift from her mom, and she was excited to show it off to Stacy. It seemed like a simple, logical plan. Janelle waved goodbye to her friends as they drove off, never imagining that it would be the last time she would see them. The next morning, Sunday, June 7th, Janelle and her boyfriend Mike Henson became concerned when Susie and Stacy didn't show up for their planned trip to the water park. They called Susie's house multiple times but got no answer. Finally, they decided to drive over to the house to check on their friends. When they arrived, the first thing they noticed was the shattered glass on the porch. The glass globe covered the porch light had been broken, and shards of glass were scattered across the ground. The bulb itself was intact. Mike, thinking nothing of it, swept up the glass and threw it in the trash. At the time, it seemed like the responsible thing to do. After all, nobody wants broken glass lying around. But in hindsight, this seemingly harmless gesture may have destroyed critical evidence. Inside the house, things appeared strangely normal at first. All three women's cars were still at the property. Susie's, Stacy's, and Cheryl's. Cheryl's car was parked in the garage. There were no immediate signs of forced entry or struggle. But as Janelle walked through the house, she began to notice unsettling details. Susie's bed was unmade, as if she had slept in it. All three women's purses were piled together on the stairs leading to Susie's bedroom, along with Stacy's overnight bag. Cheryl and Susie's cigarette packs were sitting on the counter, an unusual detail as both women were heavy smokers who rarely went anywhere without their cigarettes. Stacy's clothes from the night before were neatly folded by the bed, and her migraine medication was still in her purse. Perhaps the eeriest detail was the television, which had been left on but had gone to static. Janelle and Mike were increasingly uneasy, but the strange moment came when the phone rang. Janelle answered, hoping it was Susie or Stacy. But instead, she was met with a man's voice making obscene comments and sexual remarks. Horrified, she hung up. Investigators would learn that Cheryl and Susie had been receiving similar prank calls in the weeks leading up to their disappearance. When Janelle and Mike left Susie's house that morning, they were unsettled but still unsure of the gravity of the situation. Meanwhile, Stacy's mother, Janice, had grown increasingly concerned. Stacy hadn't come home and she hadn't called, which was completely out of character. Janice assumed Stacy was still at Janelle's house and called Janelle.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
To check in. That's when she learned that Stacy and Susie hadn't stayed at Janelle's after all. Janice began calling Susie's house repeatedly, leaving increasingly frantic messages on the answering machine, but no one called her back. At this point, she decided to take matters into her own hands. Together with Stacy's sister, Janice drove to Susie's house to see what was going on. When Janice entered the house, the same unsettling details stood out to her. The unmade bed, the stacked purses, the folded clothes, the cigarettes, and the eerie stillness. Most concerning to Janice was Stacy's migraine medication, which was still in her purse. Stacy suffered from debilitating migraines and never went anywhere without her medication. If she's out there, she's in her underwear, Janice told the police later, pointing out that Stacy's clothes from the previous night were still folded neatly by the bed. She knew immediately that something was very, very wrong. Janice finally called the police to report the three women missing. Officer Rick Bookout, a Springfield police officer, was the first to arrive at the scene. At first, the officer didn't feel too alarmed. On the surface, it appeared to be a standard missing persons case, and there was no immediate evidence to suggest foul play. But as he walked through the house, the same odd details began to raise red flags. The house was too quiet. There was no signs of forced entry or a struggle, but there was an undeniable sense that something was off. The TV's static-filled screen was particularly haunting. It felt like someone had been watching TV, but had been interrupted, leaving it on as they disappeared. The officer also noticed that all three women's cars were still at the house, which was another strange detail. Where could they have gone without their vehicles, purses, cigarettes, and other essential items? None of it made sense. And then you had those obscene phone calls. The obscene phone calls that Janelle received earlier that morning wasn't the first disturbing call made to the Streeter house. In the weeks leading up to the disappearance, Cheryl and Susie had reportedly been receiving harassing prank calls. The calls were described as obscene, with a man making sexually explicit comments. After Janelle answered the phone at Susie's house that morning and received another inappropriate call, many began to wonder if there was a connection. Was the caller someone who had been watching the house? Could the calls have been part of a larger plan to target the woman? Or were they just a cruel coincidence? Unfortunately, the obscene call that Janelle answered was never traced. At the time, it wasn't standard procedure to record or trace calls unless they were ongoing or life-threatening. This missing piece of evidence is just one of many frustrating aspects of the case. With three women missing and no immediate evidence to suggest what had happened, investigators were left grasping at straws. Early theories ranged from a planned disappearance to stranger abduction, but none of them provided concrete answers. One of the first people investigators looked into was Susie's ex-boyfriend, Mike. Susie and Mike had been in a volatile relationship that ended years ago. Mike later admitted, sure, we hit each other before, back when we were going out. That statement alone was enough to raise eyebrows. However, Mike claimed that he and Susie had remained on good terms after their breakup, and he provided an alibi for the night of the disappearance. Investigators were able to confirm his alibi, and he was eventually ruled out as a suspect. Investigators also looked into Cheryl's past relationships, particularly her marriage to Don, Susie's former stepfather. Cheryl and Don had divorced in 1989 after 9 years of marriage, and Don had reportedly left town after the split. Cheryl's son Bart later revealed that Don left Cheryl in significant debt after the failure of his business, which strained their relationship even further. Don had been out of Cheryl's life for years, and there was no evidence to suggest he was involved in the disappearance. Still, his whereabouts were unknown at the time, leaving some unanswered questions. Another early theory suggested that the woman had left voluntarily. Could Susie and Stacy have decided to run away together? Could Cheryl have joined them for some reason? But those who knew the woman insisted that this theory did make sense. Susie and Stacy had just graduated, and they were excited about their futures. Cheryl was a homebody who rarely left the house, plus none of them had taken their cars, their wallets, or even their cigarettes. If they had left voluntarily, they would have taken at least some of their belongings. And one of the few leads that seemed promising in the early days of the investigation came from a tip about a suspicious man seen near Cheryl and Susie's house. A neighbor reported seeing an unfamiliar man lingering in the area on the night of June 6th or the early morning of June 7th. The man was described as a transient with dark, shoulder-length hair, a tan complexion, and a medium build. Police released a composite sketch of the man and appealed to the public for information, but he was never identified. Was he connected to the disappearance, or was he simply a stranger passing through the neighborhood? Without additional evidence, investigators were unable to pursue this lead further. As the weeks began to turn into months, one name began to stand out among lists of suspects, Robert Craig Cox. Cox was a convicted felon with a long history of violence against women. He had previously been convicted of the 1978 murder of 19-year-old Sharon Zellers, a Disney World employee in Florida. Sharon's body had been found in a sewage station near Cox's motel, and he was arrested shortly after. However, his conviction was later overturned by the Florida Supreme Court due to insufficient evidence. By 1992, Cox was out of prison and living in Springfield, Missouri with his parents. When investigators learned of his violent history, they immediately considered him a suspect in the Springfield 3 case. Cox claimed he had nothing to do with the disappearance. He told police that he had been home with his girlfriend on the night of June 6th, and the two had gone to church together the following morning. His alibi was confirmed by both his mother and his girlfriend, but years later, Cox's girlfriend admitted that she had lied to protect him. She revealed that he wasn't with her that night, leaving his whereabouts unaccounted for. In interviews, Cox made cryptic statements about the case, at one point claiming, quote, "I know they're dead and I know where they're buried." However, he has refused to elaborate further, leaving investigators and the families of the victims frustrated and desperate for answers. More than 30 years later, the disappearance of Springfield 3 remains unsolved. Flyers with Susie, Stacy, and Cheryl's faces still hang in restaurants and shops around Springfield. Vigils are held regularly to honor their memory and keep their story alive. Despite the years that have passed, the families of the Springfield 3 refuse to give up hope. They continue to fight for answers, and the Springfield Police Department remains committed to solving the case. The reward for information leading to an arrest now stands at $42,000. If you know anything about what happened to Susie, Stacy, or Cheryl, you're asked to contact the Springfield Police Department at 417-864-1810 or submit a tip anonymously to Crime Stoppers at 417-869-8477. This case is heartbreaking, but it's solvable. Someone out there knows what happened, and it's never too late to come forward. The families of these women deserve closure, and the community deserves justice. Let's keep their story alive and continue to push for the truth. Now let me know your theories in the comments section below. What do you think happened? Do you think they're still alive? Or do you think somebody killed them? Or do you have another theory? Let me hear it. Of course, give us a thumbs up if you like our video. Hit that subscribe button down below. Hit the bell notification button to be notified of future videos. And of course, if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, bring in new hosts, be able to pay them, and eventually take this show on the road. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
Taxes was feeling so stuck. Sitting in traffic, squeezing into a parking spot, all to squeeze in getting tax help during your lunch break. Now Taxes is a TurboTax expert who does your taxes for you, while you go about your day getting real-time notifications about their progress and the most money back guaranteed. Now this is Taxes, Intuit TurboTax. Get an expert now on TurboTax.com. Only available with TurboTax Live Full Service, real-time updates only in iOS mobile apps. See guarantee details at TurboTax.com/guarantees.